The lesson this morning I've titled, Let Us Do Good. This lesson is a lesson that I prepared originally because I'm going to be at a Bible study in January in San Diego. There's a few preachers that get together there, and this is the topic that I've been assigned as we're going to be working through the book of Galatians together. And this topic comes from the very end of the book of Galatians, from Galatians chapter 6. And I figured that if that was helpful for us to talk about in San Diego, that it would be helpful for us to talk about here in Lawrenceville today. And the outline has a lot of information on it that I won't be able to cover totally in a sermon, but you'll be able to have those resources for you to refer back to if you want to look at more things in detail. But let's go ahead and just start by looking at this text in Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 through 10. It says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith." I think if we were to look at this text, we would see that there are things that we ought to believe and things that we ought to understand. And ultimately, what we believe and what we understand ought to bear fruit in what we do. And so what Paul wants these Galatian readers to understand is, or what he wants them to believe, is that we will reap what we sow. That's just sort of the way things work. Whatever you put into the ground, that's the thing that's going to come out. In Hosea chapter 8, in verse 7, God is lamenting his people's decisions that have brought them destruction. And the way he describes it there is that they have sown the wind, but they will reap the whirlwind. Somebody in Bible class a couple of weeks ago made the comment that sometimes people sow their wild oats and pray for a crop failure. And unfortunately, that is the way that we think sometimes, is that our decisions don't actually have the consequences of the decisions that we make, but that is just the way things work. You put a corn kernel in the ground, a corn stalk will come up. But what he also wants us to understand is that when it comes to our lives, that really we have only two choices. We can either sow spiritual things or we can sow according to the flesh. And really that's a theme throughout the book of Galatians. If you were to look in Galatians chapter 5, it really kind of comes to a conclusion here in Galatians 5 and verse 16. When he says, "But I say, walk by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the flesh. For the desires of the flesh are against the Spirit, and the desires of the Spirit are against the flesh, for they are opposed to each other, to keep you from doing the things you want to do." And so, really, every choice that we make, every path that we begin to take in life, is either because we are sowing to the Spirit in some way, or we're sowing according to the flesh in some way. But if we believe that we will reap what we sow, and we understand that we ought to be sowing to the Spirit, then doing good is the fruit of that. Doing good is the necessary outcome of believing and understanding what is good. If you look over in James chapter 2, James makes this point for us. James 2 and in verse 14, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him? If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that? So also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead." You know, what James's point is that if we have a real faith, that faith will move us to actually do the things that we say that we believe. Otherwise, it's not really faith. It's dead. It's non-existent. It's in word only. And so again, if we believe and we understand what we ought to believe and understand, then what that will result in is us actually doing good works. I think Paul wants us to see that right away in this text. Now, one thing that that means is that even in a doctrinal crisis, even when we're having to take a stand for what is true, what the text says, that good works are still important, you know? Sometimes I think maybe people have an attitude that, well, I'm just going to stand for the truth and I'm not going to back down and I'm going to let people know this is what God says, and we ought to have that attitude. But if it leads us to be harsh or to be bitter or to be sinful in our mindset, then the things that we say that we believe really are of no avail. You know, you see that over and over again. In Galatians, there's a doctrinal crisis going on about circumcision, which we talked about a little bit in Bible class. There are people teaching that you have to be circumcised if you want to be a Christian. And Paul takes a really hard stand on that in the book of Galatians. But where he ends up is reminding these Christians, you need to commit yourself to doing good works. What about in the book of 1 Corinthians? 1 Corinthians is filled with all kinds of doctrinal crises and all kinds of problems that that church was having. There were divisions, there was sexual immorality, there were brethren that were taking each other to court and suing each other. There was this whole thing about eating meat offered to idols and being like the world around them. And yet, when Paul gets to chapter 13, he says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels but don't have love, it profits nothing. It's worthless. Titus is another book that really emphasizes good works. And when Paul left Titus on the island of Crete, he talked to him about how there were all kinds of false teachers that he needed to be aware of, but over and over again, Titus ought to be encouraging those Christians to do good works. And the reason why those things are connected is because doctrinal purity and moral purity are connected. You know, when Jesus is warning his disciples about false teachers, what does he say in Matthew chapter 6? He says, by their fruits you will know them. You can look at their lives and you can tell whether they understand and believe the things deeply that they ought to believe and understand. Similar in 2 Peter, when Peter warns Christians there about false prophets and false teachers, he talks about their lust and their greed. These are the ways that you can identify them. And so doctrinal purity and moral purity are connected. And in James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, what James reminds his readers there is that our religion can be worthless if it's not actually producing good fruits. And so religion that is pure and undefiled before the Father is this: to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. And so, really, to be able to sow to the Spirit, then we need to be people who are not only believing what's right and understanding what's right, but also doing what's right. And that seems to be an expectation no matter who's writing text in the New Testament. So doing good is the righteous expression of God's Spirit producing God's character in us. If you go down to Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22, Galatians 5 and verse 22, we've already talked about how there's this choice that we have to make. Do we sow according to the flesh? Do we sow according to the Spirit? But this is what you will reap. This is the fruit of the Spirit. Galatians 5 and verse 22. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. And those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also keep in step with the Spirit. Let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. And so, again, if we have God's Spirit in us, there will be fruit that we manifest that makes that clear. That we will be representing God's character, that our character will become conformed to his character. And if we believe what we ought to believe and understand what we ought to understand, we ought to be doing what we ought to do. But I think there's another way that you can look at this text. And you can also see that there are obstacles to doing good that Paul identifies. That if we're really going to commit ourselves to being people who do good works, because we have God's Spirit in us and we're manifesting that Spirit, that sometimes there are things that discourage us or get in the way of us really doing all that we ought to do or all that we can do. And the first obstacle that I'll identify is from verse 7. Deception. He starts that verse by saying, do not be deceived. You know, the scriptures warn in several different places that deception is a powerful tool that Satan uses. And sometimes he can even make it so that we deceive ourselves. You know, we think that we're sowing to the Spirit, but really we're sowing to the flesh. We think that we're doing what we ought to do, but really, maybe we're not. If you look in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 13, he says, for you were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. The fact is that sometimes we can be zealous, but our zeal can be misplaced. We can be really zealous maybe for standing for some of those doctrinal truths that we ought to stand for, but again, if that's not resulting in us doing good, then the things that we're standing for and the things that we're saying don't really matter that much, do they? And so in Romans chapter 10, Paul talks about how there were Jews that he wished would be saved. And he said that they had a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. We also think maybe of Apollos in Acts chapter 18. Apollos was fervent and he spoke the things that he knew, but even the things that he knew were lacking. But what the scriptures tell us is that our works reveal what we really are. You know, we can talk about our identity and we can think about our identity, but it's what we do that actually proves what our identity is. Titus chapter 1 in verse 16 says, they profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. And also look over in 1 John chapter 3. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 16. By this we know love, that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. But if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. You see, we can't convince ourselves that we really love God if there's no fruit of that in our life. We can't convince ourselves that we understand and believe what's good and true if there's no good and true fruit that comes from those understandings. And so the first thing that we need to realize is deception is an obstacle to doing good. We might convince ourselves that we're sowing to the Spirit. We might convince ourselves that we're doing good. But if there's not actual fruit that we can see, we're deceiving ourselves. Now, there's another obstacle to doing good. And I like the way that the New American Standard translates this. This is in the 1995 version. They've updated it since then, but I really like this phrase. At the beginning of verse 9, it says, let us not lose heart. I'm going to call this obstacle discouragement. The Greek word for this means literally to be negatively influenced with the outcome of experiencing inner weariness. It's the idea that over time that we can become sort of jaded, you know? You ever felt that way? That you wanted to do good for people and maybe you tried to do good for people, but it was hard and it was discouraging and maybe they didn't appreciate it. Maybe it didn't really result in the thing you wanted it to result in. And so over time, you just start to fade in your desire, you know? I've tried to do good for this person and they don't really seem to appreciate it very much. And so the idea is that over time, we're susceptible to losing heart. We might just feel defeated, might just feel like our heart's not really in it anymore. And I think that if we were to think about why we become jaded, why we become discouraged, that a lot of times it's because we're focusing on the wrong things. And the Bible tells us about the things that we ought to be focusing on. And if we'll focus our minds on the appropriate things, we're going to guard ourselves from becoming discouraged or from losing heart like we should. Remember earlier in the book of Galatians what Paul said in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20? He said, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. When we stop thinking about ourselves so much, we're going to stop getting discouraged so much. When we stop thinking about how other people think about us, then we're not going to lose heart when people don't appreciate the things that we might try to do. And the way Paul thought about himself was, it's not about me, it's not about my identity, it's about Christ, it's about him being glorified, it's about him being exalted. And so if I get the praise or the credit or not, that doesn't matter. So if we focus on ourselves instead of Christ, we're susceptible to losing heart. Another misplaced focus would be if we're focusing on receiving instead of giving. You know what Jesus said, according to Acts chapter 20 and verse 35. It is more blessed to give than to receive. I'll tell you what, if we really believe that, we won't be discouraged by the things that we give so often, that maybe we feel are not accomplishing what we want them to accomplish or are not being appreciated as they ought to be appreciated. Because the blessing is in the giving, you know. We have the privilege to be like Christ, to give of ourselves or to give of our means. And when we realize that the blessing is in the giving, not the receiving, we won't be easily discouraged. Jesus said in Matthew 10, in verse 39, whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. But also look over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, Paul uses the same phrase about losing heart. Now, I'll just go ahead and point this out. It's in verse 16. In verse 16, he says, so we do not lose heart. Okay, now, if you feel like somebody that loses heart, if you feel like somebody that's discouraged, this should be a text that's helpful for you. Because Paul is saying, this is what keeps me from being discouraged. This is what keeps me from losing heart. So let's go back to verse 13. In verse 13, he says, since we have the same spirit of faith according to what has been written, I believed and so I spoke. We also believe and so we also speak, knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring us with you into his presence. For it is all for your sake, so that as grace extends to more and more people, it may increase thanksgiving to the glory of God. So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. A lot of times when we lose heart, it's because we're focusing too much on the here and now and not focusing enough on the eternal perspective. You know, right now, it seems like everything is difficult. Right now, it seems like people don't appreciate the good that I'm trying to do. Right now, I have less energy and I have less means and I'm just feeling really discouraged and I just want to quit. I just want to give up. Paul says, you know what keeps me from feeling that way? Is to think about eternity. It's to realize that in the grand scheme of things that this time is so short and that there is an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. Now, there's a third obstacle here too. In verse 9, after he says, let us not lose heart in doing good, Paul reminds us, for in due time we will reap In due time, we will reap. A third obstacle would be impatience. As we've been discussing, you know, we will reap what we sow. That if we plant or sow according to the Spirit, we will reap according to the Spirit. But the thing is that a lot of times that reaping doesn't come as quickly as we would like for it to. And we get impatient. And I think that this farming analogy that Paul uses in Galatians is a very appropriate analogy. Because, you know, when that farmer puts a corn kernel in the ground, he doesn't just, like, take a nap and wake up and go harvest his corn. There's a long growing season. It takes a lot of patience. Reaping is certain, but it's not immediate. And very rarely is there an immediate payoff. Sometimes we might grow impatient if we expect instantaneous positive feedback. I've done a good thing. Now, where's the benefit? I've done a good work for somebody. Where's the fruit of that? And we need to remember that patience is often what we need to have. Look over in James chapter 5. In James chapter 5, James reminds his readers of this. And he uses the same analogy. He talks about agriculture. James 5 and verse 7, "Be patient, therefore, brothers, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient about it, until it receives the early and the late rains. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brothers, so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. As an example of suffering and patience, brothers, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. Behold, we consider those blessed who remain steadfast. You have heard of the steadfastness of Job, and you have seen the purpose of the Lord, how the Lord is compassionate and merciful." For us, for those of us who believe in judgment and in eternity, we ought to remind ourselves that that is when the final fruits of all of our efforts will be harvested. Even here in James chapter 5, James is talking about the day of the Lord. When the Lord comes back, that's when the reaping will be. And Jesus talked the same way in the Sermon on the Mount. When he talked about giving, when he talked about praying, when he talked about fasting, he talked about people who do those three things so that people will see them. And what does he say? They have received their reward. But three different times in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, "But your Father who sees in secret will reward you." When that comes is ultimately on the day of the Lord, when the Lord comes back. And so maybe we do some good works, and maybe we want to do some good things, and maybe we do see some benefit here and now. But even in this life, we have to be patient, and ultimately we have to be patient enough to know that the full harvest won't come until the end. But there's a fourth obstacle here. And after he says, "In due time we will reap," he says, "If we do not grow weary." A fourth obstacle to producing good works is fatigue. It's similar to the second one that we identified. In verse 9, the New American Standard says, "Let us not lose heart," and then it ends with, "If we do not grow weary." Those are similar words, but the first word has more to do with the process. Getting jaded, getting worn down, just having your heart not be in it anymore because, you know, over time, you're just losing heart. But this last word means reaching the point of succumbing. You know, like you've tried and you're weary and you're hard and you just feel like you're going to faint. That's the way the King James Version renders this. Faint, if we do not faint. And so the point for us is that sometimes we may feel exhausted to the point of just wanting to quit. How much good work do I need to do? Man, like I did this for this person last week, and I did this for that person this week, and you know, I've got all these other things going on. I mean, I just want to stop. I need some me time. And what he tells us about good works is that it takes perseverance. You know, Jesus did some of his very best work when he was tired. Last week we looked in Mark chapter 6 when Jesus took his disciples to a desolate place so that they could rest. And do you remember what happened? They got out of the boats and there was a crowd of people. And Jesus didn't say, "No, I've done enough good works today." And said that he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. I think about John chapter 4. In John chapter 4, it tells us specifically that Jesus was fatigued. It says in verse 6 that as Jesus was traveling, that he comes to Jacob's well. And so it says, Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well. It was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink." Notice that when this woman presents herself to Jesus, Jesus doesn't say, "Okay, this is my break time," you know. The chapter goes on to give us 36 more verses of Jesus speaking to this woman and teaching this woman and helping this woman to know that she can have streams of living water. And so what Hebrews chapter 12 tells us is that when we feel weary, when we feel fatigued, when we feel that temptation to just quit trying to do what's good, Hebrews 12 and verse 1 says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." If we're going to follow Jesus, then we need to follow Jesus even when it's hard. If we're going to follow Jesus, then we need to be like him and be able to put other people's needs before our own, even if we feel like we've grown weary to the point of losing our strength. So what we see is that if we were to look at these four principles, that if we're going to cultivate good works in ourselves or cultivate good works in our churches, that really is sort of like weeding a garden, you know? There's all these weeds that pop up, the things that get in the way of us actually being as fruitful as we ought to be. And we have to counter deception by evaluating ourselves accurately. We can't deceive ourselves and think that we're sowing to the Spirit and being fruitful if there's not actual fruit that we can see. We've got to counter discouragement by focusing on what's important. Don't think about yourself. Don't think about, what else did we say? Don't focus on receiving. Don't focus on the temporal, but focus on what's important. That's how we can guard against discouragement. We've got to counter impatience by managing our expectations. Don't think that just because you did good for somebody today that you're going to see the fruit of that today. And then finally, we've got to counter fatigue by developing perseverance. Following Jesus takes some real grit, you know? It takes some real determination. It's not always easy. And our Lord never promised that it would be. And so what Galatians tells us over and over again is to walk by the Spirit and be led by the Spirit and to live by the Spirit and to keep in step with the Spirit. See, the Spirit is what is in us, guiding us to reflect the character of God. We think so short-sighted when we think that God just wants to save us and that's it. No, God wants to save us so that he can use us. And God is continually molding us to reflect his character and his nature in ourselves. Very quickly, I've listed some applications from Galatians. It'd be interesting to think about these principles that we've talked about from Galatians chapter 6 and to go back through the book of Galatians and see all of the good works that he tells them that they ought to be doing. And here's just a practical list. In chapter 1, he tells them it's important to preach the gospel accurately. In chapter 2, he talks about remembering the poor. He also mentions that we should correct brethren whose behavior is inconsistent with the gospel, just like Paul had to do with Peter. We need to receive people with difficult conditions instead of despising them, like the Galatians had done with Paul in the past. It's important for us to tell the truth, chapter 4 and verse 16. He reminds us of one of the most important commandments, to love your neighbor as yourself, in chapter 5. In chapter 6, he talks about, in a spirit of gentleness, restoring brethren caught in transgressions. He tells us to keep watch on ourselves in chapter 6 and verse 1. And he also tells us in chapter 6 and verse 2 to bear one another's burdens. In chapter 6 and verse 5, it's important for us to bear our own load, not to overly burden other people because we're just not willing to do what we can. In chapter 6 and verse 6, it's important to be grateful for what we've received and be willing to share what we have. In chapter 6 and verse 10, we need to respond to the opportunities that we have in front of us. When we see opportunities, let us do good. And in the end of verse 10, he reminds us that we ought to do good to everyone. That doing good works for others is not something that's just limited to the people in this building. But as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, while the emphasis is still on those who are of the household of faith. If I could just sort of summarize those applications. The first point is that developing an authentic love for Christ in ourselves is the single best thing that we can do for others. You know, if you want to be a person who bears good fruit, if you want to be a person that is a blessing to other people, if you want to be a good preacher, or a good elder, or a good father, or a good husband, or a good wife, love Christ. That's not selfish, to work on your own faith. Because the more that you love Christ, the more that people will see Christ in you, and the more that Christ's character will be reflected in the things that you do and the way that you live. Secondly, accurately communicating God's will to others is good and loving, regardless of how uncomfortable it might be for them or for us. Sometimes it's really awkward to tell people what you know that they need to hear, because we don't want to offend them. But their spiritual well-being should be more important to us than our awkwardness or lack of awkwardness. It takes tact, it takes wisdom, but we need to love each other enough to say what needs to be said. But then finally, having spiritual priorities will make us more sensitive to both the spiritual and physical needs of the people around us. You know, it's an easy out for us to say, well, spiritual things are just what matters, right? We should only care about spiritual things. Spiritual needs are the really most important needs. And the fact is, the gospel doesn't really let us off the hook like that. Some good works might be overtly spiritual, but really, any good works that we do are spiritual, and we need to be sensitive to both the physical and the spiritual needs of the people around us. And so, sowing to the Spirit will lead us to actively doing good. That's the major point here, is that if we are going to be people who are led by the Spirit and filled with the Spirit, if we understand what's right and we believe what's right, then our lives should be filled with the fruit of what's right. Galatians 6 and verse 10 says, "So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good." Jesus said in Matthew 7 and verse 12, "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." I'll offer a couple of disclaimers very quickly. Biblical patterns are important. If we're going to do good for other people, then I think that we should look at how the church in the New Testament did good for other people. That doesn't mean we should organize ourselves in ways that would be unbiblical. And a biblical focus is important. Just because we are sensitive to the physical needs of other people doesn't mean that we know that we think that physical needs are more important. Surely spiritual needs are what are most important. But following Jesus is fundamentally characterized by actively doing good for other people. Last passage that I'll look at with you is actually the same concluding passage that I had last week. In Matthew 25, when Jesus talks about those who were faithful to him, this is how he describes them. It says in Matthew 25 and verse 31, "Then the king will say to those on his right, Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will answer them, truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me. If we are not actively producing the fruits of the Spirit in our lives, we need to ask ourselves why. Is it one of these four obstacles that we've identified? Is it because we're letting ourselves be deceived or discouraged or impatient or growing fatigued? But whatever the problem is, if we're going to follow Jesus, Jesus expects us to demonstrate good works in ourselves. And so let us do good. If there's somebody here that wants to come to Jesus, to give your life to him, you have an opportunity to do that today. You have an opportunity every day, but we like to make sure that you know that you can be baptized before you leave this building. And so if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, and you want to be baptized into Jesus for the remission of your sins, if you're willing to follow him, you can make that choice today. If there's somebody here that wants to share some struggle, to ask for prayers of the saints, to confess some sin that might even be public, you have an opportunity to do that too. If you have any needs that we can help with, we want you to come to the front and let us know while we stand and sing.